Blog Talk Radio.
For radio as secular as our Constitution, tune in to Free Thought Radio.
After discussing why abortion is a state church issue with Barbara Alvarez,
we play an interview with the late Tom Flynn, author of The Trouble with Christmas.
Then we celebrate the winter solstice, the real reason for the season.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. In Ethiopia, severe human rights violations and abuses continue to be committed by all sides to the conflict, the Human Rights Council has heard. In a special session called by the forum's members on the conflict that has now spread from Tigray in the north of the country, delegations also learned that 9 in 10 people there require humanitarian assistance. Deputy High Commissioner for Human Rights, Nada Al-Nashif, said that it was likely that more than 400,000 people in Tigray were now living in famine-like conditions. Since only limited relief has been allowed into the region since UN humanitarians raised the alarm in June. She said that at least 2 million people across the Tigray, Amhara and Afar regions have been displaced because of conflict, and many of them are not receiving the assistance they need to stay alive. The Deputy UN Rights Chief noted with concern that the nationwide state of emergency announced on the 2nd of November had led to mass arrests of those believed to be sympathetic to the Tigrayan People's Liberation Front. Thousands of ethnic Tigrayans have been detained, along with more than a dozen journalists and UN staff, she said.
While some of those arrested over the past 6 weeks have been released, we estimate that between 5,000 and 7,000 remain detained, including 9 UN staff members. Many are detained incommunicado or in unknown locations. This is tantamount to enforced disappearance and a matter of very grave concern.
In response, the government of Ethiopia delegation rejected the council proceedings as politically motivated interference before insisting on its unreserved commitment to human rights. The conviction and long prison sentences handed down to four prominent human rights defenders in Vietnam for spreading so-called anti-state propaganda has been condemned by the UN Rights Office, OHCHR. The four individuals, Trinh Ba Phung, Nguyen Thi Tham, Do Nam Trung and Pham Duan Trang, were sentenced to up to 10 years in jail and 5 years on probation, OHCHR spokesperson Ravina Shamdasani said on Friday in Geneva. She explained that a fifth individual, journalist Lee Trong Hung, will stand trial on the 31st of December on similar charges. Mr. Hung had been due to run for political office as an independent, but he has been detained since March 2021 without access to a lawyer or family visits. Here's OHCHR's Ms. Shamdasani now.
The charges against these five people who are reporting on human rights and land rights and who were arrested in 2020 and 2021 appear to be part of a campaign to silence and intimidate those who raise their voices in defense of human rights. All the cases follow similar worrying patterns that raise serious issues concerning their presumption of innocence, the legality of their detention, and the fairness of their trial.
Intercommunal clashes that erupted in Cameroon's far north region in the past 2 weeks have driven at least 100,000 people from their homes, although the real number may be much higher, UNHCR, the UN Refugee Agency, said on Friday. In the last few days, more than 85,000 people have fled into neighbouring Chad, while at least 15,000 Cameroonians have been forced to flee inside their country. Indications are that displacement into Chad has accelerated fast, as the total is nearly triple the figure reported last week, when 30,000 people had crossed the border seeking safety. Casualties from the fighting have also risen to 44 people killed and 111 injured, compared to 22 dead and 30 wounded last week. In total, 112 villages have been reportedly burned down. The vast majority of new arrivals in Chad are children, and 98% of the adults are women. Some 48,000 have found refuge in 18 urban sites in N'Djamena, the capital of Chad, and 37,000 people are scattered across 10 rural sites along the bank of the Logun River. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. Thank you.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and remember, there are only 5 more shopping days until the winter solstice.
The winter solstice on December 21st, the real reason for the season. I'm Dan Barker, and this is the December 16th, 2021 edition of Free Thought Radio. Grant Blaschka of Audio for the Arts is our engineer here in the Stephen Yule Friendly Atheist Studio in Free Thought Hall, the National Office of the Freedom From Religion Foundation in Madison, Wisconsin.
Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which has 2 purposes: to educate the public, that's you, about non-theism, atheists, agnostics, skeptics, and to work as a state church watchdog to keep religion out of government as our secular constitution and Bill of Rights require. And if you're a member, thank you. If you're not, we would love to send you information, including a complimentary issue of the December issue of our newspaper, Free Thought Today, which is chock full of interesting information. You can ask for information or join at ffrf.org.
In the second half of today's show, we will remember Tom Flynn of the Council for Secular Humanism, who died this year. We're going to replay a light and fun interview we did with Tom in 2006 about his book, The Trouble with Christmas.
And also joining us in the second segment, for the last time as our FFRF Ann Gaylor reproductive rights intern, will be Barbara Alvarez. And she's going to definitively talk about why abortion rights are indeed a state church issue. And we're also going to celebrate the winter solstice, of course, coming up on Tuesday, December 21st, with a homily by Ann Gaylor, FFRF's principal founder, that I will read in her place. And we'll hear some solstice music by Dan Barker and Kristen Lems.
Beethoven was born on December 16th, 1770. So today would have been his 251st birthday. There's no record of his ever attending church service or observing the orthodoxy of his religion, wrote biographer George Merrick. He never went to confession. Generally, he viewed priests with mistrust. When Beethoven was dying, his friends convinced him to allow a priest to come in and deliver the Catholic ministrations. But when the priest left, Beethoven said, "Applaud, friends, the comedy is over." He was very irreverent. During the breaks today, we will hear Beethoven's Piano Concerto No. 5, Quartet No. 9 in C major, and Ode to Joy, which is based on a pagan poem by Friedrich Schiller.
And before we talk about other things, we do want to mark the fact that this week does mark the 800,000th death for COVID in the United States. That's twice as many Americans who died in World War II. 1 in 100 Americans over 65 has died of COVID. But really what struck me is that 200,000 of those 800,000 deaths were probably avoidable. They were people who died well after the vaccinations were freely available for every adult in the United States. That's after June or so. So these were largely avoidable deaths. And Dan, you've coined a new slogan: science has given us a shot in the arm. Well, folks, use it. Trust in science. Let's get over this pandemic.
This week on FFRF's Ask an Atheist on Facebook Live, FFRF's Director of Governmental Affairs, Mark Dan, who's in D.C., and FFRF attorney Ryan Jane, who is on FFRF's strategic response team, spoke with Utah State Senator Derek Kitchen about growing up Mormon, about becoming an atheist, and then becoming a plaintiff in a court case that struck down Utah's same-sex marriage ban, and then being elected to the Utah legislature while having Mormons as his constituents.
During the show, Mark asked Senator Kitchen about running for office in that largely Mormon district.
When you were running for office, did being an ex-Mormon help you better connect you with your constituents in Salt Lake, or was it a hindrance?
Salt Lake City is such a unique place because it's different than the rest of the state. We've elected a lesbian mayor. Right now, our city council is majority LGBTQ. We have, for a long, long time, prided ourselves on being a place of acceptance and diversity. One thing that's special is that you have such a dominant cultural force in the Mormon church here in Utah.
Right.
It sort of creates fertile breeding ground for a strong counterculture. You know, I think me running as an out queer man, they didn't want to hear about my Mormon experience so much. It was more about me being non-Mormon that they liked, right? And so, and by the way, this, you know, I'm able to represent my community because I look like my community and I share the beliefs of my community by and large, right? That's not to say that everybody in my district is a non-believer or non-Mormon, even for that matter, right? But I think certainly the reality that I am a queer man, I'm out and proud about it. I'm also a non-believer and out and proud about it, allows them to see me as somebody that can go fight for the issues that matter using data and reason. And so it just never came up.
So it's refreshing to hear an elected official talk about data and reason. You can watch that entire show now on FFRF's YouTube channel. Look for the Ask an Atheist playlist at FFRF's YouTube. We are skipping the next 2 weeks, I understand, but you can tune into the live show again starting in January, Wednesdays at noon Central on FFRF's Facebook page, where you can make comments or ask questions. And our Free Thought Matters show this week is a winter solstice tribute. We discussed the true reason for the season, which ain't the birth of a son of God. It's the birth of the sun, S-U-N. It's the shortest day of the year in the Northern Hemisphere, and the ancients were so pleased when they knew that the sun would return, that days would begin to lengthen. And I tell you, Dan, I am ready for that, too. It's too dark, too early.
Among the topics we talk about on that show are Christmas displays on public property. FFRF attorney Patrick Elliott took a road trip to a town where we got the city to move a religious display off of public property.
Let's take a look at a complaint that FFRF successfully resolved regarding nativity display. We'll head about 40 miles south of Madison to the small town of Alcorn, Wisconsin. Alcorn is a town of about 10,000 people. In December, the town's merchants deploy their holiday decorations. The town even calls itself the Christmas card town. Courts have allowed displays on government property that are secular, such as holiday decorations, including something like a Santa's workshop behind me here, Christmas lights, and those types of displays. What's not permitted would be a government's focus on a purely religious symbol, such as a menorah or a nativity scene as the sole focus of a display. In 2014, FFRF contacted local government leaders about a nativity scene on the government square. Ultimately, the county agreed to move the nativity display here on government property to across the street at St. Patrick's Catholic Church. Today, it's on private property. It's a typical nativity scene with Jesus, Mary, Joseph, and Christmas figurines. So if you're the government, you can put up Frosty and his family anywhere you want. But when it comes to religious displays, leave those to your local churches.
So if you want to tune in that entire show, Patrick is standing between two displays, and he shows you the one that can be on property that's public and the one that should be private. It's a really cute segment. But we talk about the entire reason for the season on that show, and you can watch that on YouTube right now. It goes up on Thursdays on FFRF's YouTube channel. Look for the playlist for Free Thought Matters. But we also broadcast it. We want to reach the unmasked masses and educate the public. So it's on 13 major metropolitan areas on Sunday mornings, and you can look to see if it's in your area, and you can proselytize your colleagues and family to watch it. Look for those stations and times at FFRF.org. There's a news link, and there's a drop-down where you'll find our videos, and you can see all the stations we're on.
And speaking of the winter solstice, we told you last week about a number of winter solstice displays going up in state capitals and public property around the country. And more FFRF members are putting up displays in the Chicago area. Our Chicago chapter has once again placed its annual Bill of Rights nativity scene, which is the some of the founders in the Statue of Liberty looking at the birth of the Bill of Rights in a manger, not a baby
and
Jesus.
And it's an 8-foot banner. It's a new banner. It's a slightly new version of the display so that it kind of counters the huge nativity scene there.
That's in Daly Plaza.
And then there's some others in Illinois, right?
And then there's in Cook Memorial Park in Libertyville. another Free Thought banner about the winter solstice. And then in North School Park in Arlington Heights for its 10th year, a Free Thought solstice display. And then a brand new one in Glenville Village Hall featuring a banner about Reason's Greetings. So that's in Chicago. And then over in Connecticut, in Shelton, Connecticut, FFRF member John Levin has erected our At This Season of the Winter Solstice, Let Reason Prevail sign.
And that's the quoting our the founder's words of Anne Gaylor, that this season of the winter solstice, yeah, may reason prevail. There are no gods, no devils, no angels, no heaven or hell. There is only our natural world. Religion is but myths and superstition that hardens hearts and enslaves minds.
We want to thank FFRF members Jerry Bloom and John Levin for that. And then in San Diego, we just found out that they are going to erect once again that same banner in Balboa Park.
A Bill of Rights banner.
Balboa Park by the Oregon Pavilion. And if you want to, go to the San Diego Humanist website, and you can join in on the Skype call that we're going to be having during the erection of that. And then once again in Milwaukee, the Milwaukee County Courthouse has a display next to the, but close to the Christmas tree, which says state and church, keep them separate. And then our legal staff has been busy. We complained to the state of Ohio about a Senate Bill 248, which is going to force children to say a moment of silence in the schools. Remove Christian slogan, FFRF is insisting, to a North Carolina sheriff who has these religious phrases in the sheriff's office. In Toombs County, Georgia, we're rebuking coaches and football chaplains for praying with students. And then FFRF throws a penalty flag on a prayerful Indiana public school coach. You can learn about all of these complaints at our website, FFRF.org.
Look for the news link. And in a piece of good news, this week the U.S. Supreme Court let stand a mandatory vaccine requirement for healthcare workers in New York State. That was one piece of good news. We also saw that many, many newspapers around the country have picked up an op-ed written by FFRF's Director of Strategic Response, Andrew Seidel, that blasted the Supreme Court Commission on Reforming the Courts. And in this op-ed, he expresses deep disappointment with the lack of action or even the lack of urgency by this commission, this do-nothing commission, about the need for court reform, and particularly after seeing how the Supreme Court has permitted women's constitutional rights to be denied in Texas over abortion. We cannot hold abortion rights or personal rights or civil rights with the Trump court. So this has been on many, many newspapers around the country, so we're very pleased about that. Now, coming up, we are going to talk with FFRF's outgoing and first and only,
and very outgoing,
and very outgoing personally, reproductive rights intern, Barbara Alvarez, about why abortion is the state church issue, and then what?
And then after that, we're going to remember Tom Flynn, the author of the book, The Trouble with Christmas.
Yeah, we'll hear him talking about that himself, and so that will be very nice.
Then we'll hear a little bit of winter solstice music. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at FFRF.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
Margaret Sanger's motto was, no gods, no masters. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Dan Barker. Annie Laurie and I are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
And we have on the phone with us again, and for a final time, as our reproductive rights intern, our Ann Nicole Gala reproductive rights intern, Barbara Alvarez. Welcome back to Free Thought Radio, Barbara.
Hi, Annie Laurie. Hi, Dan. Thanks for having me.
So this is your last week. It's sad, and you have accomplished so much in the last year and a half for FFRF, writing blogs, monitoring legislation, writing many press releases for us on this whole intersection of religion and abortion, and you have done a farewell masterpiece blog about why reproductive health is a state church issue. So we want to talk about that, but also you did a press release for us, you know, this week briefly on a good development here in our home state of Madison, Wisconsin. Do you want to talk about that?
Yep, there's been a lot going on in the year and a half that I've been in this position.
Couldn't have been more timely when we have seen abortion rights fall so much.
Absolutely.
But do you want to talk about the Attorney General here in Wisconsin and what he did that was nice?
Sure. Well, you know, it's always nice to see something good come across the desk related to abortion rights because it's in such peril right now in the United States. But Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call did say that he wouldn't prosecute or investigate anybody who got an abortion if Roe v. Wade falls. Now, some people listening might say, well, why would he in the first place? Many people don't realize this, but Wisconsin is one of several states in the country that has a pre-Roe versus Wade law on the books that criminalizes abortion. So Wisconsin's is from 1849. That's before the Civil War, and it criminalizes abortion in the state. And Roe v. Wade nullified that. However, if Roe v. Wade goes away, that law would be triggered into effect. They're called trigger laws. They're essentially bans in waiting. It's really, really scary. It's important that we don't have this on the books. However, Attorney Josh Call did say, as long as he's Attorney General, that he won't investigate or prosecute anybody for an abortion because doing so would create a public health crisis, which we at Freedom From Religion, the foundation, absolutely believe is true. So that is heartening to see him support abortion rights. However, that doesn't mean we shouldn't call to have this pre-Civil War draconian criminalization law taken off the books.
Well, and it would fine and imprison physicians. So I'm assuming he's saying he wouldn't investigate physicians. It used to fine and imprison women, and we finally got the legislature to take that off. But, I mean, pre-Civil War. So Wisconsin, you have pointed out, is one of nine states with this kind of pre-Roe ban. And then there's about 21 states altogether that have trigger laws, as you would call them, where if the Supreme Court does a bad decision, uh-oh, watch out, right?
Exactly. Basically, ever since President Trump was inaugurated and has been packing the court to make it ultra-conservative, anti-abortion legislators have been jumping at this opportunity to put anti-abortion trigger laws on their books so that if their dreams come true and Roe v. Wade falls, abortion would become illegal, possibly criminalized in their state. There have been a few states, though, that have been affirming abortion rights, which is nice to see. But really, this creates a checkered map of the United States where it's abortion rights comes down to where you live. And that's true for now, but it will be absolutely true if Roe v. Wade falls, which unfortunately, the future of Roe doesn't look too good.
So you have written a kind of farewell blog as our Ann Nicole Gala reproductive rights intern about why reproductive health is a state church issue. And we would urge everyone to go to the freethoughtnow.org website to read your blog in full. But in the remaining 4 minutes or so, let's try to hit some of the key points there, Barbara. Why is it a state church issue? Why should secular people care?
Secular people should absolutely care about this because every single aspect of reproductive rights that's under attack in the United States is because of religious extremists. There is no scientific reason to restrict reproductive rights. And I'm not just talking about abortion, which we have you know, investigated in depth, but we're also talking about contraception. We're talking about sex education. We're talking about crisis pregnancy centers, which masquerade as fake clinics and take tax dollars. In some states, there are, you know, triple the amount of crisis pregnancy centers than there are the amount of actual abortion health clinics. We're talking about sex education. We're talking about sterilization and Catholic hospitals, which are taking over various parts of the country, including Wisconsin, FFRF home state, and take tax dollars as well. So it's not just about abortion and, you know, the future of Roe. We're talking about every single aspect of bodily autonomy and sexual and reproductive health. There is no reason to be restricting any of this, to be giving misinformation about sex and about reproductive health, but it happens on every single level, starting with the public schools and abstinence-only sex education, taking away access to contraception and birth control on health insurance plans, sterilization and the infiltration of religious hospitals. It happens on every single level, and it's because of religious extremists. So it's 100% a state church issue, and if anybody cares about secular values and reproductive and sexual health for all people, they should be very concerned about this crisis that we have. And just briefly, I want to say I did a blog post a couple weeks ago about a report of Southern hospitals. There's a lot of evidence out there about Catholic hospitals being extremely restrictive related to reproductive rights, but they also found that surrounding hospitals, even public ones in highly anti-abortion states, are also restrictive with reproductive rights because they're afraid of, you know, public outcry because of anti-abortion legislators that have been sharing this misinformation. So it's affecting everybody, not just religious hospitals, but, you know, even public hospitals and public schools.
Well, well said, Barbara. We have about a minute left. How about some parting words?
Well, I just want to say thank you so much to you, Annie Laurie, to Dan, to the entire FFRF staff, team, members, board. It's just been such an honor to work alongside people that really care about true democracy, that care about science, that care about reason, and are fighting and fighting to do the right thing in this country. I know that the future seems really scary. It certainly is. But it's always nice to know that there are people like Freedom From Religion Foundation that are doing the good fight and are standing up for what's right. And I take solace in knowing that there is an organization like you and people like you that are doing this work.
And your blogs
so thank
will.
Thank you for letting me be a part of it.
Your blogs will live on
yes.
our blog,
freethoughtnow.org. And I cannot think of anybody who could have better fulfilled my mother's legacy, Ann Nicole Gaylor, for whom your internship was named.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to do so.
So we're going to take a break. Stay tuned. After the break, we're going to remember Tom Flynn with the Council for Secular Humanism. He died this year, but we're going to hear an interview that we did with him on this show back in 2006 about his book, The Trouble with Christmas.
Hi, I'm Julia Sweeney, and I'm an atheist and former Catholic. I even wrote a play about it called Letting Go of God. Right now, Catholic bishops are using their considerable influence to deny women contraceptive rights. Please join the Freedom From Religion Foundation and help keep church and state separate. You can call 1-800-335-4021, that's 1-800-335-4021, or visit ffrf.org to stand up for true religious freedom.
Speaking freely, thinking freely. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Welcome back. I'm Dan Barker. We were very sad to learn of the death of Tom Flynn earlier this year. Tom Flynn had been the executive director of the Council for Secular Humanism. He was the longtime editor of its journal, Free Inquiry. He was also the director of the Robert Greene Ingersoll Birthplace Museum.
Tom was a good friend, an affable curmudgeon, who reveled in challenging stereotypes and especially religious assumptions, but always with a twinkle in his eye. His book, The Trouble with Christmas, made waves in the 1990s and continues to sell today. It challenges the idea that Christmas is a creation of Christianity.
And did you know that Tom was born the same year you were?
No, and I didn't know that. He obviously died far too young.
He
it
did.
Was quite a shock.
We spoke with Tom Flynn on this show, on Free Thought Radio, during our first year of broadcast. In fact, exactly 15 years ago, on December the 16th, 2006, we talked about his book, The Trouble with Christmas. Let's go back in time to hear that still very timely interview.
So, a merry war on Christmas to you, Tom.
And to you, and also happy just another day, Annie Laurie.
So, why did you write that book?
I wrote that book because, as you already observed, I was the product of a Catholic education. I grew up Catholic, eventually fought my way out of that position, ultimately became an atheist, and spent several years continuing to celebrate Christmas, and it just seemed stranger and stranger to be observing the birthday of a Savior I no longer believed in. So in 1984, I stopped, started treating Christmas as just another day. I go to work if it's during the work week and so on. And by 1993, enough people had asked me about my motives for doing this and my experiences as a non-celebrator that I decided to write the book, and in the course of doing that, did a lot of research on the history of the holiday and how it came about socially. And it's an interesting story and not usually the way most people think of it.
Well, you know, basically the Christians stole Christmas, didn't they?
Oh, yes. Actually, in my research for the book, I discovered that out of all of the things that are done in Christian churches in connection with Christmas, only one thing is a Christian innovation. Nobody had had the idea of having midnight mass the
really?
Night before anymore. Every other single thing.
Well, maybe because midnight was not really a natural marker. It was just a clock thing.
I'm not sure exactly what the reasons are, but none of the previous pagan and other pre-Christian traditions that marked the birthday of a God-man had that idea of having a celebration at a special time the night before. But everything else was borrowed or stolen, starting with the idea of a half-God, half-human who was born in humble circumstances and visited by kings.
So, for instance, give us some of those sun gods.
One, the best-known and probably Christianity's biggest cultural competitor during the days of the Roman Empire was Mithras. Mithras was a demigod, half-God, half-human.
Persian, right?
Yes. Born in a cave, visited by kings, grew up to work miracles, was executed and came back from the dead. Stop me if any of this starts sounding familiar. In fact, a lot of the lore that began to get attached to the growing Christian faith, including a lot of the material in the New Testament, represented Christianity trying to market itself to Hellenic peoples whose religious expectations had been shaped by mystery cults about resurrected Redeemer man gods. So one thing that's particularly interesting with this is the whole idea of the virgin birth, which in mystery religions with God-men who had been born of a virgin were extremely common. That idea didn't have any history in the Jewish tradition. So in the two Gospels that bother to record anything about the Nativity, in each case we see two incompatible traditions side by side. For the Jewish Christians, there's the tale of Jesus as the descendant of King David through Joseph. And then for the Hellenes, there's the whole virgin birth story, which cuts Joseph out of the genealogy entirely. He's not even the father. And so we see these two incompatible traditions kind of frozen as if in amber in the Gospels, because at that point, the early Christian church was transmitting two incompatible messages to two different publics, and they both had to go in the scripture.
So Christians came along and had to reshape it all, and they kind of paganized their teachings then by borrowing, right?
Very much so.
Why this time of year? Isn't it because it's actually not the birth of the Son of God, it's the birth of the sun?
Oh, yes. In fact, when you really get back into the history, modern-day Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's are all distorted echoes of an original ancient European holiday that was tied to the solstice, celebrating the fact that the days were getting longer. It was also a harvest festival. It also had rituals of trying to predict one's fortune in the years ahead, and so on. And over the centuries, as though in a series of distorting mirrors, these four holidays that we have today have all split off from this ancient Uber holiday, if you will.
I have a question for you. You know, so many people in the general public don't even know about the winter solstice. They have no idea what they're celebrating, which seems so bizarre to me, and they will deny that this is really pagan in origin. But could you talk a little bit about the Christmas tree?
Oh, certainly. The Christmas tree comes to us from the Hanover dynasty in Germany. One of the princes of the Hanover line was married to Queen Victoria. And, there's a centuries-long tradition of Christmas trees in Germany and northern Italy. It comes to us because of the way that the English and later American public embraced this German tradition of the Christmas tree that Queen Victoria's husband installed for the first time in Buckingham Palace. We're talking here, I think, in the 1850s.
But the earlier origins were pagan.
Oh, absolutely. The earliest origins in Germany and northern Italy were totally pagan and tied to the solstice. The evergreen trees were venerated because, unlike other vegetation, they kept their leaves through the dead of winter. So they were holding high the torch of life when other, you know, when deciduous trees had gone into their hibernation for the year.
So it makes sense to decorate at this time of year
course,
with evergreen.
And to decorate evergreens and to decorate them with lights,
mm-hmm.
symbolizing the light of the sun that we'll be seeing more of as we pass through the shortest day of the year.
And I'm looking forward to more sun.
So the Christians should be thanking us non-Christians, basically, for part of their holiday traditions, right?
Oh, indeed, indeed. And what they should probably thank us for most of all is that Christmas, this huge amalgam of pagan and a few genuinely Christian and a lot of modern secular traditions, all these traditions come together into this big cultural ball of wax called Christmas. And all of these aspects, from the tree to the manger scene to Frosty the Snowman, get this kind of Christian halo. And so Christians get the cultural benefit, which is quite undeserved, of being able to put on this show that gives the impression that the whole culture is Judeo-Christian.
Does anybody think Jesus was actually born in the wintertime, if he was born at all?
A lot of Americans think that.
But not the Bible scholars.
Not the Bible scholars. In fact, if you look at the scriptural evidence, to the degree that is evidence, the reference to the shepherds being out with their flocks by night would be a pretty clear reference to spring.
That's right.
In the Palestine 2,000 years ago would not have been a very pleasant place to be out overnight with your flocks in the middle of December. And in fact, to this day, among the shepherding peoples in that area, the time when the shepherds are most likely to pass the night among the flocks is in the spring, when the ewes are giving birth to their young.
Well, we sure appreciate you joining us. This went awfully quickly, Tom Flynn, and your book is The Trouble with Christmas, and I'm going to wish you a very merry winter solstice.
And the same to you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
That was Tom Flynn on this show in 2006. Our voices sound younger, Dan, but today I'm very raspy, so I'm lower. I injured my throat a little bit. Tom was executive director of the Council for Secular Humanism and author of the book, The Trouble with Christmas. He was famous in the Pithak community for going to work on December 25th, which he considered just another day.
In fact, sometimes we would call his office on Christmas Day just to see if he was really there, and he always answered the phone like any other business day.
Well, we can't do that this year. Tom was a good friend, a good free thinker, a very powerful voice for reason, and he is missed.
Annie Laurie, right after that interview, you said this would be a good time to hear the song Solstice Tribute.
So let's do that again after the break, and we'll also be listening to a solstice song by folk singer-songwriter Kristen Lems.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We're co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and we will be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute, where no religious body seeks to impose its will, directly or indirectly, upon the general populace.
Let's restore respect for America's secular roots. Help the Freedom From Religion Foundation defend the wall of separation between state and church. Join us at FFRF.org. Freedom depends on freethinkers.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. This time of year, most atheists and agnostics and nones, the 29% of the population.
You mean N-O-N-E-S.
N-O-N-E-S, the 29% of the population that has no religion. In fact, Pew just released another survey this week showing it has grown from 24-25% to 29% of
wow.
Americans identify with no religion. So I think most of us recognize the quote-unquote holidays, not as holy days, but as secular days, celebrating the winter solstice, which is a natural event. As we just heard Tom Flynn say, it's the real reason for the season. This year, the winter solstice is on Tuesday, December 21st.
And Annie Laurie, you usually open our annual winter solstice party here at Freethought Hall, not by reading from the book of Luke or the book of Matthew, but from what we call the book of Anne, which is FFRF founder Anne Gaylor's homily on the winter solstice. So do you want to read that right now?
Sure. And we always say don't bow your head. And we are sorry that because of the Omicron variant, we're not holding that party for our local members here in Madison, Wisconsin this year, but we sure look forward to getting together with them. And of course, I do want to say that the winter solstice is typically described as the first day of winter. You'll hear meteorologists say that, but there's so much more. And this is from our non-tract Heathen's Greetings that you can also get at our website.
Written by Anne Nicol Gaylor.
And the introduction is written by Anne Gaylor. For a fact, the Christians stole Christmas. And we don't mind sharing the holiday with them, but we don't like their pretense that it is the birthday of Jesus. It is the birthday of the unconquered Son, Dies Natalis Invicti Solis. Christmas is a relic of sun worship. For all the major festivals, there were corresponding pagan festivals tied to natural events. We've been celebrating the winter solstice, this natural holiday, long before Christians crashed the party. For millennia, our ancestors in the Northern Hemisphere have greeted this seasonal event with festivals of light, gift exchanges, and seasonal gatherings. The winter solstice is the reason for the season. The winter solstice, occurring on December 21st or 22nd every year, heralds the symbolic rebirth of the sun, the lengthening of days, and the natural new year. We like to say that we non-believers are quite willing to celebrate the fun parts of anybody's holidays. We just want to be spared the smults, the superstition, and the state church entanglements. The customs of this time of year endure because they are pleasant customs. It's fun to hear from distant family and friends, to gather, to feast, to sing. Gifts, as freethinker Robert Ingersoll once remarked, are evidences of friendship, of remembrance, of love. The evergreens displayed now, as in centuries past, flourish when all else seems dead, and are symbols, as is the returning sun, of enduring life. In celebrating the winter solstice, we celebrate reality.
And let us all say, not amen, but a person.
Or a women.
Those were the words of Anne Nicol Gaylor, the principal founder of the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
And since Christians have sometimes or often put religious words onto secular songs, Dan has repaid the favor and put secular lyrics to a well-known Christmas carol, and this new song is called Solstice Tribute. It recognizes that the sun, S-U-N, is the real reason for the season.
Oh, shining star of solstice time, your radiant hours are few. You turn and strike the new year's chime. We owe our lives to you. These darkest days of winter, we miss your warming rays. But every year this hemisphere returns to brighter days. Since olden days the human race has feared that your warmth would die. The evergreen ever seen as hope that we will survive. Oh, ancient drums, stop beating and superstitions fall. It's time for reason's greetings, for peace, goodwill.
That was my co-host Dan Barker's words, Solstice Tribute, that he performed, set to the tune of O Little Town of Bethlehem. And Dan, the albums that you've done for FFRF are all available on digitally now too, right?
That's right, through iTunes and that. We also sell the CDs.
Yep, still have those. For those of you who have CDs, we still sell them, and they're cheap. They're on sale.
And that one's on a 2-CD set called
Friendly Neighborhood Atheist. And the words, ancient drums stop beating, I think you told me when you wrote that you were inspired by something that Bertrand Russell had written.
Yeah, about the ancient drums, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Those were actually his own words.
Very lovely lyrics. I always am thinking, oh, darkest days of winter, I miss your warming rays, very truly.
So now let's hear another solstice song by the feminist folk singer and songwriter Kristen Lems. Her solstice song is called Solstice Song.
This is the time of year for gathering together. We can brave the longest night and all the wintry weather. Longest night we fear you not, for we have kept our hearthstones hot. This is the time of year for gathering together. The time of year for gathering together.
Together, we can brave the longest night and all the wintry weather. Longest night we fear you not, for we have kept our hearts on hot. This is the time of year for gathering together. So raise your glass and raise your voice in fellowship and courage against the cold.
Like I always say, take that, drummer boy. And that was Kristen Lems, a longtime good friend of ours from the Chicago area, singing her song, Solstice Tribute. And we wish everybody, instead of a white Christmas, we're wishing you all a sunny solstice.
And which is actually the astronomical new year. So on December 21st, we're actually celebrating the real new year, which drifted by the calendar.
And it's really at about 10:50 in the morning, Central Time.
So we start. So that's our show for today. Again, we want to thank Grant Blaschka for doing the engineering. Free Thought Radio is recorded in the Stephen Yule Friendly Atheist Studio in Madison, Wisconsin. We want to say hello to listeners to WOOM in Philadelphia and New Jersey, to WIDE and WMUU in Madison, Wisconsin, to WADR in Janesville, Wisconsin, to KEOS in College Station, Bryan, Texas, to KOPN in Columbia, Missouri, and KEPW 97.3 in Eugene, Oregon, KZSM in San Marcos, Texas, WOOL Black Sheep Radio in Vermont and New Hampshire, WRFI in Ithaca, New York, and Watkins Glen, New York. Hello, all you podcast listeners. If you want to help us out by giving us a thumbs up on your podcast provider, that would be very helpful. And also tell your friends and family to learn more about Free Thought Radio at ffrf.org/radio.
And more than that, tell your friends and family to learn more about and join the Freedom From Religion Foundation. You can ask for a sample copy of our newspaper information at ffrf.org. You can join up because we have a real hard new year ahead of us in 2022 to retain secular democracy, the Enlightenment, to overcome the pandemic, and to really work harder to retain the separation of church and state with your help. Thanks for listening to Free Thought Radio.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.